103.9 FM, WOZO Radio, Knoxville.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please?
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Girl, loved the mess. I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed. I really felt that I was blessed. Plus, I love my uniform. So did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age. Things I thought were true. Someday I'd break the big taboo of letting go of God. Letting go of God.
Hello and welcome to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM, live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. This is not really live. We're recording it on Sunday, June 2nd, which is 2019. And if it's not that date and time you're listening to this, then it's probably a rebroadcast and a recording. So you should not try to call in. I'm Doubter 5, and as usual, we have on the phone Wombat with us. Say hello, Wombat.
Hello, it's the Wombat! Everybody
and
get excited.
And it's the Wombat. He's laid back as usual. And we have a guest, Johan. Say hi, Johan.
Hello.
And we'll be talking to both of them extensively here in a second. But right now, I want to tell you a little bit about this radio show. Excuse me. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a call-in talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faith, gods, holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just not. There are several atheist, free-thinking, and rationalist groups that exist right here in Knoxville, and I'll be telling you how you can connect with them right after the mid-show break. Also, did you know that there was an atheist call-in television show? Been broadcasting here in Knoxville for almost 9 years now. Did you know that, Wombat?
I think I know what you're talking about, but to be honest with you, it was on TV when I was doing my laundry, and I wasn't really impressed with the acting. I'm a little bit out of the loop. I'm a little bit out of the loop, but I feel like the whole Harry Potter franchise is probably a little overrated, and the kids aren't
very good.
It's
not Harry Potter. One of these days, you catch the right channel, and you'll be able to see the show.
I'm just saying it's very bland acting. I don't mean to make you offended. It's just not my cup of tea.
Well, there's no magic wands on it, that's for sure. But we do sit and take calls from the audience. It's on broadcasting in Knoxville 6:30 to 7:30 every Wednesday evening on Comcast Channel 12. But we'll get into that more a little bit later on in the show. Also, in spite of what Steve Martin would have you think, there are an awful lot of atheist songs out there, and you'll be hearing some of them right here on this program and generally on this station as they are in rotation. Wombat, what kind of topic do we have today?
So I want to go off the thing that you had said, because I think it was really interesting, and we have enough people on the call with us that will make this a really colorful conversation. But the topic is questions that people bring us when we're talking to them out in public. And so you're an atheist. I'm an atheist, too. But we got also another atheist on the phone who's also, I mean, we're all atheists here, but we adopt additional perspectives because atheism is just one answer to one question. It's one single stance to one question. Hey, I don't believe in God. So we adopt philosophy sometimes on top of that. And Johan, who's on the call with us, who was on here last week, or I think last week, a couple of weeks ago, is a Satanist.
Wow.
And we...
I am.
Yeah. Hey, do you want to give your disclaimer now?
I'll let you guys, once we get into it, we'll get to that.
Sounds good. Sounds
good. I have some questions, that's for sure. But so, I'm pretty sure I know what Satanism is, and I have a pretty good grasp on it. I don't think there'd be any surprises from my end, but listeners may find the few.
Oh, absolutely. Plus, you've been an atheist for like 50 years, Larry. My uh-huh. atheism can't even drink yet. So, like, I still have the, I still can do a pretty good Christian impression of like, hey, why did those trees, where did those trees come from? Mm-hmm. Look at them.
Right.
So, yeah. I would think like my questions might be a little bit, the way how I'd answer questions that are brought to me might be a little bit more different from the way how you have. So, we might have some really cool three-way perspectives on how we answer our point of view to other people who have questions about them. And so I guess maybe, Larry, did you want to start with like some questions, maybe like some big ones that people bring up to you, and how do you respond to them?
Well, one of the first and most popular questions is what made me stop believing?
Great
you know,
one.
Because, you know, as soon as some people walk up to the table and ask me what an atheist is, and I tell them, and the first thing they ask,
wait, walk up to a table? What are you talking about?
Yeah. Why would you, what about the table?
Yeah. What's this table thing that you're talking about? You say you got a table.
I sit out at parks and down at the Market Square Mall in Knoxville, and I talk to people about atheism. I have a little sign that I put up called Ask an Atheist. So people walking by can look at it, and if they have any questions, they can drop by, sit down, and actually talk to me about atheism. I'm happy to answer their questions.
That's very
cool. So when they do, it sometimes they don't know what atheism is. And I say, well, it's someone who doesn't believe in God. And sometimes they just stand on up and walk away because they're not interested anymore. But, you know, sometimes, and most of the time, they say, well, what made you stop believing? Did someone die? Did your mother die and you're mad at God?
Yeah.
Because that's what the preachers tell them. That's what their inside group will tell each other about atheism. You know, it has to be something terrible happened to them to no longer trust in God.
Right.
They can't fathom that there are people out there that don't believe he actually exists.
I mean, it makes
sense.
That
he's really not there.
Something bad had to happen to you to fill your heart with hate, right?
Right, right.
Right?
Exactly.
Well, I can't tell if you're being sarcastic.
Oh, that's what they say.
You're leaning into my sarcasm. That's not good. It's never a good thing. Anyway.
No, there's a lot of reasons that atheists are angry. Matter of fact, Greta Christina has a blog, and she put out a blog post that said 50 reasons why atheists are angry and have every right to be. Basically how religion is hurting people and causes great harm in the world today and in our society. So the listener might want to write down her name, Greta Christina, and look her up. I would look up Greta Christina and anger, and see what comes up. She's turned that blog post into a book now, and it's 99 reasons why atheists are angry.
Nice.
So, but it's not because we're mad at God. We're not mad at God. We're mad at religion and the effect it has on our society.
We have a religious person on the call with us right now, though. I wouldn't necessarily say it's an atheistic religion, so maybe it's theism that could be an issue. Hey, Johan, you want to dial in on this? When people ask you why you're an atheist, how do you respond? And when people learn that you're a Satanist and they ask you why you're a Satanist, how do you respond to that?
Well, I will start off by saying that I am not a member of the Church of Satan. I am a Satanist.
Okay.
I don't speak for the Church of Satan, the priesthood, or any other Satanist. Any thoughts or views or opinions are all about, you know, myself.
That's
and all my own.
You.
Absolutely, positively.
Right.
So if you're curious at all, you can go online, churchofsatan.com, whatever, and you can learn more about Satanism on your own. But for me personally, why I'm an atheist?
Yeah. When people ask me.
Because
you
I really liked yeah. when I really liked Jurassic Park as a kid.
How does that blend into that?
So being raised in a Christian household like I was, one of the things my church would tell us is that, well, you know, what about the story about Adam and Eve and the ark? Well, Satan made dinosaur bones to trick humanity.
Oh, yeah.
And being a little kid, I thought, wait a minute, dinosaurs aren't real? I don't know. Dinosaurs are pretty cool. I'd be pretty upset if dinosaurs weren't real. I'm starting to ask some questions about this whole God business.
Oh, man.
So, you can pretty much track my deep, deep love for asking questions about everything is what ultimately led me to be an atheist, just to ask questions constantly about everything. And when I stopped getting the answer because God, and I started actually getting the answers I was looking for, I started to realize that God didn't put that tree there. That tree's there because a seed fell there and germinated, and I understand how the whole process works.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Or someone planted it there.
So everything tracks back to the fact that a little kid really loved dinosaurs, and now he doesn't believe in God.
Yeah.
So how did we get to the Satanists?
How did I become a Satanist? Well, that's
probably the question that a person would come up to you. It's like, so why are you a Satanist then?
Yeah, well, that's kind of belies a certain misunderstanding of the concept.
Hmm.
You don't necessarily become a Satanist. You are one. You know, they're not made, they're born.
Really?
So,
how does that work?
Well, when you look at the Bible is a list of rules, right? It's this kind of rule book that explains to you how you are supposed to try and live your life with the understanding that you're going to fail. But the Satanic Bible is more of a checklist. And if you kind of reflect and embody these concepts, if you already think the things that are in this book, then you are a Satanist. Like a Jeff Foxworthy, you might be a Satanist.
Yeah, but a newborn baby can't do that kind of cogitating that you're talking about. You're born a Satanist.
Is there things that would preclude a baby from being a Satanist, or like do you have to be like a certain age for it to like all click together?
Well, that's the thing, right? Children, there are very few concepts in Satanism that are air quotes sacred and air quotes. But one of the few things that are held in incredibly high regard are children, because children are the most satanic.
Okay, so
they are the.
So a brand new baby could be a Satanist? Is that basically?
I would argue that a brand new baby is the perfect Satanist.
Okay. They're the perfect atheist because they have no beliefs in God.
It's true. It's true.
Exactly.
And Johann's perspective is that he's an atheist, but what Satanism does for him is fulfill more philosophical positions than just, and I don't believe in a God.
Satanists do not worship Satan. There's no deity involved at all.
Nor do they even believe in him, correct?
No, not in a literal spiritual entity. It's more of an archetype.
Like a mascot?
Exactly, like a mascot. So a Satanist, at the end of the day, worships himself. A Satanist's entire life is centered around living a life that they love and enjoy, making sure that their needs are met and that the needs of the people they care about are met, and that they can be successful and well-regarded by their peers. So that is why I would argue that infants are perfect Satanists, because the only thing an infant really cares about
is themselves.
Is itself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They are the closest to nature. They're the closest to the primal human id, if you will. And that is purely satanic.
Let me ask you.
That's why children are considered to be so sacred, air quotes, in Satanism.
Are there versions of Satanists that believe in the literal Satan?
Well, I am somewhat biased. And to quote somebody who said it much better than I could, in the words of Anton LaVey, there are Satanists, and then there are crazy people. So if you worship a literal theistic devil. You are a devil worshiper. Now, said devil worshippers would argue with me tooth and nail that, no, I'm a Satanist too, and we would get in this big, deep, long argument about really weird esoteric concepts and ancient frickin' history about what groups did and didn't exist, and it would be a mess.
Yeah.
But if you are asking me personally, no. If you worship a devil, you're a devil worshiper, but you are not a Satanist.
Hmm.
Okay.
I would also argue that if you worship the devil, you're no better than any Christian.
Yeah, that's what I understood about Satanism, that they didn't really believe that Satan was real. It was more of a concept that they respect, the type of person who considers himself first, basically, and maybe even humanity first, before he would ever consider a god to worship.
Hmm.
A rebel, an iconoclast, yeah. An individualist, a rebel. Mm-hmm.
Though, here's maybe some questions that I'm just going to poke out. Is there any significant difference between being a humanist and being a Satanist?
Significant similarities or differences?
Differences.
Humanist believes that all humanity is deserving of equal respect. That just by the sanctity of human existence, that you are of intrinsic value.
Okay.
Satanists do not believe that.
Ah. So there are some humans that are more valuable intrinsically than others in Satanist perspective?
Absolutely.
Okay. Examples? Like what?
Care for a metaphor?
What group would be the least valuable group of humans in the Satanist perspective? Yeah, that's probably a good question.
Am I allowed to call out something like that?
As long as it's not a political call to action, it's FM radio.
I think it would be very difficult to argue that the Westboro Baptist Church serves any larger social purpose.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much
all five of them. But...
Yeah.
So don't get me wrong. They definitely get their annoying group of people. Though I would say this, the fact that we can use them as a punchline is in itself valuable, because it's like whatever they represent, I know is not good, right? It's like, hey, if Superman is fighting for this guy, or if Superman's fighting a person, I know whoever he's fighting is the bad guy. If the Westboro Baptist Church are protesting in front of the building, I'm probably, as a normal human being, supporting that building, because, like, who are these guys out here? So, if anything, just the contrast, the juxtaposition that they provide, wouldn't you say that there's some innate value there?
For me as an individual, I feel that the harm and the distress... I've seen this personally. We had a member of my high school who died in the armed forces. And his funeral was held at our high school. And Westboro Baptist Church said that they were going to come protest. And I saw the distress and the anger and the fear that stirred up, just knowing that they were talking about coming.
Mm-hmm.
No, not worth it. The harm and that they do to the people that they protest far outweighs any amount of arguable, dubious amounts of good they can do as a moral punching bag.
Mm.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. I guess I'll follow up. If someone asked me why I was an atheist, I got, I think I brought this up. I literally said this the first time when I was with Larry in a radio station, when I still lived in, Tennessee, Knoxville. But, It's like, if I flip the coin, right? And I flipped it on the back of my hand, and we're both looking at the back of my hand. It's like, I don't know if it's heads, and I don't know if it's tails. And I can even ask another person who saw me flip the coin. They say, like, I don't know if it's heads or tails. And you know what? I think that might actually be the best answer until we have some more definitive evidence. And we can go to science and say, hey, science, flip 1,000 coins. Tell me if this is heads or tails. Science comes back to us and says, well, it's 50%, 50%. That's inconclusive for me. And I'm still not going to force myself to believe it one way or the other until I have better evidence than that. Maybe until I move my hand and look at the coin itself.
Yeah.
But when science is inconclusive and when I don't have enough information otherwise, I don't know doesn't just become an option for me to say, but it's actually the best answer for me to say.
And it's the most honest, for sure.
It's the most intellectually honest, and I can't imagine why it would be a bad answer to give or be one that's deserving of punishment. Also, if I don't know what the answer is, I'm not going to be convinced that it's one or the opposite or one or the other. I just don't have enough information to convince me to position yet. So I don't know tends to be the basis of what I call the default position, which is, hey, I don't know, and I don't have a good reason to believe it either way. And that's exactly where I'm at with my agnostic atheist position. I'm not saying that there is no God. I'm not saying there is a God. I'm just saying he's got to do a better job, or she's got to do a better job of convincing me that they exist, because right now I'm totally fine where I'm at right now with I don't know. And I think that's a great position to have. It's not the best answer to have until I have better evidence. It's the best thing to say when you don't know something.
Yep. And that's where faith comes in. People are, who was it? Peter Boghossian said that faith is pretending you know something when you don't.
Yeah, faith is kind of bad.
It's the opposite of saying, I don't know. It's saying, I've got the answer. Even though you have absolutely no evidence and you're just using your gut feeling, or as they like to say, the Holy Spirit, to tell you what's right. Feelings aren't facts. I'm sorry to have to tell you that.
Faith is like a blank check that lets you claim you have evidence that you don't actually have, basically.
Right.
It used to be a normal word that you could say. It used to be like, hey, I have faith in you. Like, hey, I believe in you. But I feel like it was one of those words, like many, that were just co-opted by like religious groups, by meaning this is our word now. We've connotized it to mean this specific thing. And that's unfortunate.
Yeah. And they equivocate it, too. They say it. They use one definition to support themselves when they say it for a different context. Anybody who's interested ought to go to the dictionary and open it up and look up faith. There are like four or five different definitions for the word, and religious faith is just one of them. And it doesn't mean your everyday experience either.
Right. I mean, even praise used to be a standard word of like, hey, you give me high praise. I appreciate that. Now it praise in the common sense, at least in America, Western praise means explicitly what you do to, you know, the God that you worship. And it's just unfortunate how many terms in our normal lexicon are being borrowed or taken. I made a song. We were talking about this in an old episode. I made a song that said, Lord, in it multiple times, like, yes, Lord. And my friend, who was also a fellow atheist, was like, hey, I didn't know when you became religious. What's the story behind that? And I'm like, no, dude. Like, one, as an expression, and two, that's a job title. Like, people used to be called lords, especially if you love Game of Thrones. Like, that's a common thing that people just throw out all left and right. It's not explicitly the name of Jesus or any offspring of gods or anything like that. It's just a thing people used to say for people they held in high esteem. It's an interesting concept.
I mean, I'm a Satanist, and to this day, I will say, oh my God, or you know, some iteration of that when something incredulous or surprising happens.
When something's really hard to believe, I can say that you would say, oh my God.
It is
not credible.
It's unbelievable.
Yep.
Ridiculous, silly, and entirely outside rational norm. So of course I'd say, oh my God, it fits perfectly.
I wonder if God in its own right is a job title, because, you know, even the Christian God has a name, or like, depending on, like, you know, most denominations have given that God a name, and God is just like the job title that we describe that being as. So it's, I feel, another thing that's just been co-opted. Do you guys say bless you? Is that a normal thing that even Satanists say?
I say Gesundheit.
You say Gesundheit?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, out of sheer force of habit and the fact that the rest of my family is still rather religious, I'll say it on occasion.
I say it on occasion. I don't even think a big deal about it. Like, for me, it's just a standard American expression. Like, if someone literally wants to get offended by that, I'd be like, hey, dude, I'm an atheist. Relax. And then they're like, oh, okay. You're on our team. But, like, yeah, I would encourage people to not take back words, but feel encouraged to use all the words at their disposal, and not feel like they can't say them because a group says it a lot, because then we just lose words at that point. And that's not valuable. Questions, is the topic of today's show. Larry, you got another question that you normally get asked? Something you want to break down?
Yeah. One guy came up and said, how can you not believe God is real? I mean, or the Bible. He was really talking about the Bible. He said, I mean, just look at prophecy. Prophecy, the Old Testament prophecy was fulfilled in Jesus Christ. And I had to take exception to that because I told him, I said, the people who wrote the New Testament had the Old Testament right there. They could write whatever they wanted to. It was not prophecy that the stories confirmed what was in the Old Testament. And if you really want to talk to people who don't think that the prophecies were fulfilled, talk to the Jewish people. I mean, they're still waiting on the Christ to show up. But prophecy is one that comes up quite a bit.
Well, to add on to that, the New Testament was not written down for about 200 years after these events were purported to have happened. And before that, it was all oral tradition.
Right. And it wasn't made into a book until like the 400 years afterwards in Rome when they finally got the, what was it, the group of people that got together and solidified it.
Council of Genea.
Anybody?
And the book that we have today, the King James Version, which is the one which pretty much every Bible in an American home is based off of, is only a couple of hundred years old.
Yeah. You know, it's another interesting thing about King James is he authored another book or originated another book. Did you know that?
Yeah, he wrote Goosebumps. I couldn't believe
it. No, pretty close. Pretty close. He wrote another book called Demonology.
That's some nifty facts.
So that makes it like he wrote two books on demonology. So one was the Bible and one was just demonology.
So we can say that with smirking
It's a fascinating read.
Yeah.
We could say that pretty with like tongue in cheek, but like there are Christians that believe in demons no without any batting of the eye. So like you could bring that up in a conversation and people be like, so
the Catholics are still hiring exorcists right now.
No
doubt. They're building the ranks of exorcists, which is so strange. It's like witchcraft.
Well, I mean, in probably about a good 50, 60 years ago, they really started to roll back on exorcisms. But yeah, you're right. Probably in the last, 10, 15 years, they've been having like ecumenical, like not ecumenical councils, they've been having like groups of priests come together and give classes on exorcisms.
Yeah. And that's the name of the group that got together 400 years after the Old Testament, or after Jesus died. It was the Council of Nicaea in Rome.
There you go.
And they put the Bible together, the Bible, and they left out a lot of the books that they didn't think should be in there. There's a lot of other Gnostic texts.
All of the Gospels they left out.
Yeah,
they voted on which books should be in and which books should be out. Not like it was a deistic decree.
Not only that, but it wasn't even unanimously like come together, which is why you have so many offshoots of various forms of Christianity after the fact and even before the fact. Like, just the most popular people were able to say, hey, this is it. We're walking away. We figured it out. And the other people were like, we're going to start our own quasi-Christianity religion. We'll show you what's up. And that didn't work out well for them.
No,
there's a lot of bloody history with how the Bible was made. Oh, there's some really great literature on how it was done. I know Tracy Harris from the Atheist Experience really delved into it, and she actually has a lecture on it. I would recommend it. It's on YouTube for people to check out, How the Bible Was Made, Tracy Harris.
Yeah.
Yo, guys, we're getting close to the bottom of the bottom of the hour. We're going to break for some music and then come back. I think when we come back, we'll dig a little bit into some of the topics that we talked about and go into some deeper questions like, why call yourself an atheist? Why call yourself a Satanist? I think these are some pretty good things to get into. But for now, we got Quiet Company, and they're going to be playing us a really, really great song. Stay tuned, and we'll see you after the break.
Okay.
Tried a million times to understand it, and I thought
FM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best. And welcome back. I'm Dr. Five, and this is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LP FM. Live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is June 2nd, and we're recording this in the studio, so you're probably listening to this as a rebroadcast or a podcast. But we can tell you about the free thought groups that you can join right here in Knoxville. First, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville, founded in 2002. We're in our 16th year. Ask Now has over 900 members, and you can find us online at knoxvilleatheist.org. Or you can go directly to meetup.com and search for Knoxville Atheists. It's just that simple. Also, you can join ASK in person at our weekly meetup, which happens every Tuesday evening at Marley's Tap Room and Pizzeria in the Old City in Knoxville, where we get together for food, drink, and conversation. Everyone is welcome. That is, as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Thanks, Atheist Experience. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to Meetup and search for an atheist group in your town.
Don't find one, start one. Another large free-thinking group here in Knoxville are the Rationalists of East Tennessee. That's R-E-T. They've been around for more than 20 years and have bi-weekly presentations and discussions at the Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road. They meet the first and third Sundays in the Goins Administration Building Cafeteria Annex. If that's too much to remember, just go to rationalist.org and click on upcoming events. Then there's also, the Sunday Assembly, which started in England just a couple of years ago and now has spread around the world. It's a no-God church setting for those who no longer believe in God but still like the fellowship of a church-type gathering. They only meet once a month, though, on the fourth Sunday down at the Old World's Fair site in Knoxville. Look for the International Building about 10:30 on Sunday. Earlier in the show, we said we'd talk about Knoxville Atheist call-in TV show. Well, it's called the Free Thought Forum, and you can see it most every Wednesday between 6:30 and 7:30 on Comcast Channel 12 or Charter Channel 192. Or you can watch it streaming online at ctvknox.org. You can also find archive of some of their shows on YouTube, where a fan has been posting them. Just go to YouTube and search for three words, Free Thought Forum Knoxville. Also, if you're interested in getting involved with the TV or radio show, just come to the Ask Meeting. An Ask Meeting or RET Meeting and talk to us about it. You could be our next co-host or guest. But today we have a co-host and Wombat and a guest in Johan, and we're ready to get back to the topic.
Nice! Well, cool.
Matt?
That was really smooth. We're right at the bottom of the music. So, hey, I wanted to talk about a quick thing that we discussed at the beginning of the show. Digging a little deeper, so we had said that Johan, you had mentioned that some of the people who have no value as humans are like the Westboro Baptist Church, and the reason why is because they cause like a lot of dread to your friends and anxiety. I'm wondering, what is it about a group of people causing stress that makes them intrinsically lose or objectively lose their value as human beings?
Well, if you ask this question to any Satanist, you probably get different answers depending on who you ask. But for me personally, if an individual lives their life in such a way that they don't interfere with the rights and free will of others, and they try their best to put something into their society, they're of value. Now, you don't have to be a Satanist to do that. Anybody can just be a good citizen, let other people live their lives the way that they want to live them, and just kind of go about your business on your own, and you're never going to hear a peep from a Satanist, you know, probably wouldn't anyway, but that person has a lot of value. But if you are just absolutely convinced that you need to strip the rights and freedoms of other people away on the grounds of your religion, and you take away from society more than you give, you are of no value.
You're talking about people on welfare and that type of thing?
Well, not necessarily. I know people who have had their lives saved by welfare. And even though they are on welfare, they still manage to contribute positively to society. They're interested in their communities. They still go out and, you know, volunteer or find some hobby where they produce or create. And they enrich the lives of the people around them in a really positive way.
Can I throw something
out? More.
If I was incapacitated, do I lose my value as humanity? Because at that point, I won't be able to offer anything to society.
Well, I would ask you this. If you were in that situation where you knew you were going to be a vegetable for life, would you, and be very, very, very honest, would you be entirely comfortable living another 40 to 60 years that way?
While I don't mind getting a question for another question, it would be nice if it was just one answer, question, answer, question, answer. So I'm saying, like, do
That's
I lose
fair.
My value as a human, whether I want to live longer or not, or whether I desire that lifestyle or not? Do I lose my value as a human being once I've become incapacitated and can no longer contribute to society?
I think that if we're talking about complete vegetable, you have no way of positively contributing anything at all.
Yeah. Do I lose my value as a human being?
Or that's a difficult question. And
I think it's something we can think about.
Well, I mean, it's a difficult question for me to answer because to me, there's other factors.
Okay.
Like, just from a blanket, you know, horsepower, work power, or monetary production standpoint,
yeah,
I don't take it purely as that. There's other things to consider. So if you are still able to talk and communicate with the people around you and you're still able to, you know, love and support them, that is a type of good, that, you know, a type of positivity or production you put out into the world.
And if
but
I can't,
for me personally, if I were completely in a vegetative state, I would be 100% comfortable with not being around anymore.
True.
Period.
But did you lose your value as a human being when you became a vegetable? That's the question I'm asking.
For the betterment of society, yeah. That's not to say somebody
else... You can
else...
still be an organ donor.
Yeah.
You know, if you
decide
to
exactly, but I mean, you kind of have to give up the ghost for that to happen.
Well, if you've signed the card and you're completely a vegetative state, then that's about all you can do.
Exactly. But...
I have a quick question.
If somebody else still has that value in you, and helping and taking care of you in that state is doing good for them if they need that, that is a type of value.
I'm going to throw something out just as an idea. Also follows on to Larry's point of organ donation. Typically, we give permission or if someone can take stuff from our body or not. But if I wasn't a human, if I was objectively not valued as a human being, whether or not I send that card, it wouldn't matter anymore once I'm in that vegetative state. They're free to take whatever they want from me if I'm at the point where I can't produce anything positive to society aside from my organs. And if I can't provide anything and I have no value, they should have the right to take that away. Is that what you're saying? Do you think everyone should be a forced organ donor because once they're in a vegetative state, they have no value as human beings because they can't provide to society?
No.
Or is there something else that makes someone important?
We need to make a distinction here. Is he answering as a Satanist or is he answering just as a personal opinion?
Specifically him. Yeah. Specifically Johan.
Specifically me.
Specifically you.
Well, personally, I feel everybody should be an organ donor. Once you're dead, that's it. You don't have, like, you're not going to miss body parts you're not using anymore.
But
now, speaking to legislation...
No, just to make sure we're focused on the question that I was asked, should everyone be forced to give up their organs because when they are put in a incapacitated or vegetative state? Like, do they lose their rights as a human being to make that choice of whether or not they want to be an organ donor because they're no longer valued as a human being once they become incapacitated, if that's the case? Should that be the case?
I would say that I don't have the experience medically, psychologically, or legally to really form an opinion on that. Does that make sense? It's kind of the same reason why I don't have an opinion on certain really controversial topics, is because it is so far outside my life experience and my pool of knowledge that I wouldn't have enough information to form an educated opinion.
So you're saying basically we don't know if someone actually loses their value as a human being because we don't have enough information when they're in that kind of a state, or when they can't provide anything to society, because we may not necessarily have all the human experiences to make that judgment in an objective form.
I'm saying I don't. I'm saying if I were to sit down and really think about this and do some research into what the law says, what medical science says, what psychologists say, and really dive into this concept, and you came back to me after a week, I'd have a strong, educated opinion.
Okay.
But as I sit here talking to you right now, I couldn't give you one.
Is there a possibility that, like, you could have a current Westboro Baptist Church person in the future change their mind and actually be a really influential member that contributes to society?
Absolutely, it's already happened.
Isn't that potential...
Several times, if I'm not mistaken.
Doesn't that potential existing give them innate value?
Well, I think that that value comes when they make that transition.
That's fine, but, like, if they're in a position where they can gain value, isn't that a demonstration that there's, like, it's not a definitive zero-value human being? If that makes sense?
Well, I feel like you're counting your chickens before they hatch in that situation.
It's just potential at that point.
If
and
I,
that
yeah,
potential
if I,
may
I,
never realize.
So if I work, and then I get a paycheck, right? So, like, if and I'd say my work's valuable and I can buy stuff, but eventually the check's in the mail. Things can accrue value even over time. And if we don't know it's not going to happen, and if we don't know if it will happen, then it's not us saying, hey, you don't have any value right now, because who knows what they could do in the future, right? So, like, I feel like right now we've settled on they don't have value, but if there's a potential for them to have value, that in its own right is valuable. Whether they can whether they realize it or not, that potentiality is the value statement. And if we agree that there's that potentiality, doesn't that innately mean that they have value as human beings?
Well, I feel like you're going to have to be a little bit more specific on how we classify or at least define value.
That's fair. Until then, we can't make the certain claim that they have no value if it's not defined.
Well, I could tell you that they do technically have value. They have monetary value.
Okay. Hey, that's something too. Human value.
I mean,
really what
think
I was
about how much
on.
A kidney is worth on the black market.
Sure. Yeah. Like they have organs they can give up.
They have technical monetary value, but whether or not they're contributing something positively to the progression of and stability of society, I would say no.
Here's another question. If we were talking to Westboro chapter or Westboro person, and they said, hey, we have a group of Satanists, and they're having like this really, really good community, they would look at you guys and probably say some pretty bad things. They're like, these guys are detracting from society. They're not contributing anything positively. And if I hear a bunch of Satanists say the same thing about Westboro Baptist Church, how can I as a outsider of both groups determine which one's right and which one's wrong?
I think it's pretty easy. For a Satanist, look at what they create. Look at what moves they make in their lives around them. Look at the influence they have on the people near them. And you'll see positivity. You'll see support. You will see creativity like you've never seen before.
Okay, so support.
Music, art, poetry, writing. Satanists love to create.
All right.
And they love to produce, you know. A Satanist isn't a Satanist if they can't walk the walk. So while a Westboro Baptist church will sit there and, you know, wave their signs and scream profanities and raise a big fuss, they're not making anything. They're not contributing anything. They're detracting. They're drawing attention away from others towards themselves over a perceived imaginary slight. While a Satanist doesn't hear them because their opinion doesn't matter. They're barely people. We don't care what they think. It's completely immaterial to us. So a Satanist is going to sit down, buckle down, focus on what they can do, what they can produce, what they can make happen, and that's what you're judging.
Can I throw something out? If I talk to a Westboro Baptist church, I'm not saying this is the case. I've never really talked to them, but it's not something extraordinary for me to believe that if I talk to them and said, what's your problem with Satanists? They're like, well, they're not like us. We support each other as a group. We make music. We help their community. We contribute to charity. Our taxes go to blank, blank, blank. We help each other out. We produce art. We produce music. We produce things. We love producing. We make things that are so creative you'd never seen stuff like that before. All Satanists do is they fool around, and we don't care about their opinions. They're barely humans. Like, as an outsider, I'm hearing the same thing. I could probably hear the same thing from both sides. Do you have anything more objective?
Hearing and seeing are two very different things. So look at what the Westboro Baptist Church does. You know, do they make music? Do they go out of their way to contribute to charities that help people? do they have a positive impact on the people around them? It's not just about saying that you do it. It's about actually doing it. A Satanist isn't going to say, I did these things. The Satanist is going to do them, point at what they did, and say, there you go.
Okay. Larry, what do you
got? Well, I have a problem. First, when you said that they're barely human, barely people, that rang bells for me. I mean, it alarm bells, because that's how you demonize a group. And once you demonize them as the other, then you can pass laws or do what you need to persecute that group. And I don't think that's the direction we need to go in as a society.
Sort of like what Westboro's doing right now.
Also, you're setting a standard of productivity. Person doesn't produce something, then he has his value is less to society. Mm-hmm. Well, this is going to go by the wayside in the next 100 years or so as robotics and artificial intelligence robs us all of our jobs.
Okay, Siri, make a top 10 album.
within the next couple of 100 years anyway, most people will not be doing anything productive for the society. They'll be consumers. Mm. And we may very well live in a society where there's a minimum income. And people will just be taking the dole and living as best they can. Mm. So how does that fit into your ideology or worldview?
Just you specifically, not Satanism, but you specifically, Johan.
Well, that's pretty easy to ask, surprisingly. Or that's pretty easy to answer, surprisingly.
Yeah.
Against the grain of a couple of Satanists that I can think of off the top of my head, I am 100% in support of UBI, Universal Basic Income, the concept that you're talking about. You're correct. Automization is going to steal the vast, vast majority of unskilled labor in this country, and most skilled labor, to be perfectly honest. And people are going to have to rethink what employment is and how our economy works on a pretty fundamental level.
And human value.
Yes.
According to what you were saying earlier,
so how human, to value
human value is going
well,
to...
Well, I mean, I would argue that the metric I'm using for human value will largely stay the same. Because it's not necessarily about what your paycheck looks like. It's about what you put out into the world.
Again, if artificial intelligence and computers and robots are doing the producing, and most people are sitting around because there are literally no jobs, do they literally have no value?
Yeah.
Well, who is helping create these new robots who help eliminate jobs and do work?
They create themselves. They repair themselves. They run factories. They do everything from farm to make clothes.
Do humans lose all automatically value done once because we get to that level?
We have delegated our tasks to machinery.
Yeah, like we're an egalitarian society that's supported by robots. Do we lose our value at that point?
Not the manufacture of new robots, the creation of new kinds of robots.
Okay, but who makes
the plan?
You're still kind of sidestepping the question. We are talking hypotheticals here.
Yeah, it's all hypothetical.
Absolutely.
You know, in the future, we may not have jobs.
In the future, we may not be producers. We just might just be consumers. Would we all lose our value as human beings at that point?
In this hypothetical situation,
if we all became consumers, would we lose our value as human beings? Hypothetically. Hypothetically, yes. Hypothetically, maybe. Hypothetically, what?
Well, I mean, I feel like this is a bit of a, I wouldn't say impossible question, but an impossible situation.
Yeah, it's a hypothetical situation.
Hypothetically, if I were a rabbit, how high could I jump?
Yeah, basically.
But
that's what we're asking.
You know,
I would say, hey Larry, just to make you feel safer, Johan, I would say, speaking as a person who believed that productivity belies human value, that yeah, you would lose your value as a human being if you switched entirely to a consumer lifestyle, and.
I believe that the question in and of itself is flawed.
Hmm.
Because there is no way to eliminate human creativity.
Okay, so Westboro Baptist Church, they're very creative. They make really nice posters, whether we like what they say or not. They exercise the right to protest in interesting ways. They're creatively going around a lot of laws and bylaws to make some pretty horrendous things, but they are exercising creativity. In that basis, would you agree that they have some sort of value to them?
But what does that contribute?
Interesting question to a question. We got to work on that, Jan.
I feel like you're asking me to make a very clear unilateral across the board no backsies.
No, we're not like that.
The reason I say that, I brought this up, is there are a lot of people in this world that cannot produce.
Right.
I mean, they're physically disabled people. They're mentally challenged people.
There's people in third world countries, blind and deaf people who cannot work.
And right now there are a lot of people out there pointing to them and saying these people have no or very little value.
Right.
And it just tries the question, do we tie human value to productivity?
Right.
Is that a good position to hold?
How about this? I can throw my point of view out. I would say by essence of being human being, you have value. If we treat you badly, or say like someone, we sentence someone to death or something like that, and we say this is a travesty, or someone died, and we're like, I'm so upset. The reason why I'm upset is this life, whether it had productivity, whether it had an option or opportunities, it's been expunged, and that loss of life is a loss of value because that was a human being. And that's why situations that are tragedies, like mass shootings and stuff like that, are sad, because we lose valuable human beings. Or in the opposite sense, like I would never find a situation where we lose a person in this world. And like from a humanistic perspective, we lose a person, and that's a good thing, because that's still a loss of a person. Or if someone chose to sacrifice themselves, I'm like, hey, that was at least an exercise on that person that we respected as a human being to take their own life. We can respect that.
So there's no situation where you would see the loss of a human life as a positive.
No, that's exactly the thing I was trying to bring an exception for at the very last point. But like the whole concept of, in the general sense, hey, someone died today. It's like, oh, that sucks, because, you know, a human being has life, and that sucks. Was it voluntary? Okay, well, if it was voluntary, at least we can respect that as a human being, someone having, you know, an agency and authority on what to do with their own life. I can respect that,
yeah,
too.
If they were ill and could never get better,
yeah,
and were pain and suffering 24/7 or something, and they just said, I want to end it, I want out of it.
Yeah.
Then, you know, that's euthanasia.
Yeah.
You know, we
so
a position that you should be able to do that.
I do as well. I believe that your choice to, you know, to continue living is exactly your choice. So if I'm hearing you correctly,
3 minutes before we end the show,
only situation, the only situation where human life being lost is acceptable is when it's your own choice.
I would say with exceptions. I'm the kind of person that's never 100% or 0% on anything. My basic parameter, though, is I, by default, respect human life because I'm a human being, and that's selfish, of course. But because of that, it offers value, and that's the main point that I think I could take to, like, the most certainty. And then beyond that, like, what people choose to do with their lives or what happens to their lives afterwards is dependent on whatever contextual situation that we're experiencing. We got 2 minutes, though. You want to go for it? Go for it. We could talk about this offline, but how about we get to straight up to closing words real quick? Johan, you can go for it. Do you have any closing things you want to say?
I don't believe that there's ever going to truly come a point where humanity as a whole has nothing left to give.
Okay.
So, as a whole, I think the question's kind of silly, but for a Satanist, it's not about who you are, it's about what you can do. But
okay,
there's a lot of ways to do a lot of things.
Cool. Larry?
If you're smart and you're clever, you have value.
Nice. Larry, what do you got?
Oh, just the usual. If you're worried about hell, don't worry about it, because everybody is going to somebody else's hell.
You are everybody the best therapist
is, of a different religion. Everybody of a different religion is telling you you're going to hell, and there's no way you can avoid them all and still have a... you can't avoid them all, period, even if you're an atheist. So don't sweat it. The time to worry about is when they prove hells and heavens and souls are real.
Cool. And we'll see you guys next week on Digital Free Thought Radio. Thank you guys for tuning in. See you next time on 103.9 FM. Let's go.
Thanks, Johan. Thanks, Wombat.
Yep, no problem.